So imagine spending, I don't know, 10 years of your life just sweating over a single discipline. You're experimenting, failing, pulling all-nighters to hone this very specific
Oh,
craft.
yeah, the classic creative grind.
Right. And then one day, a machine swallows your entire life's work in what, roughly 2 seconds? And it doesn't just look at it, it extracts the literal math of your genius and then starts selling it back to your own clients for like a penny.
It's a terrifying thought,
It
honest.
really is. So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are bringing you a stack of sources. We've got tech articles, research notes on artificial intelligence, TEDx transcripts, and documents outlining this brand new initiative called Protect the Art.
Yeah, there is a lot to get through today.
For sure. Our mission here is to look at how the people who create the culture we consume, the artists, the writers, are finally weaponizing their own data against the AI machines that are trying to replace them. So, okay, let's unpack this because the tension vibrating through these sources is just intense.
It really is. I mean, the stakes could not be higher for anyone who makes a living through original thought. We're dealing with this fundamental economic imbalance.
In what way exactly?
Well, if you think about it, artists and creators generate the most valuable assets on the internet, right? Their output is the fuel for our media, our app designs, our entertainment, basically the visual language of our entire culture.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's the stuff we actually want to look at.
Exactly. But the tragedy we are seeing in the research is that many of these creators don't realize just how valuable their raw output is until a multi-billion-dollar artificial intelligence company scrapes it, absorbs it, and starts charging a subscription fee for it.
Wow. Yeah. So we are moving way past that old sci-fi trope of like robots with laser beams taking over the world.
Oh, absolutely. This is much more subtle.
Right. It's this quiet administrative kind of takeover. The fear radiating from the creative community in these articles, it's all about speed and scale. It's the feeling that years of hard work, say, a lifetime of refining a deeply specific watercolor style, can just be ingested by a neural network in milliseconds.
It's an industrial-scale vacuuming of human experience, and the resulting data isn't just kept in some vaults for research, you
They're
know?
actually using it.
Yeah, the systems use those stolen statistical relationships to generate competing content on demand. A user types in a prompt, and the AI leverages the specific style it took from you to spit out 1,000 derivative images. It essentially drowns out your original voice in a sea of cheap replicas.
Which brings us to the personal catalyst behind a lot of the documents we are reviewing today, because this whole Protect the Art initiative was spearheaded by an entrepreneur and author named Carrie Oberbrunner.
Right, and for him, this isn't just some abstract debate happening at a tech conference.
No, not at all. According to our sources, Oberbrunner discovered that multiple books he had authored were used to train these massive AI language models. And I mean, nobody asked him. Nobody compensated him.
Which is just wild to think about.
It is. He even found instances where his TEDx content, like his actual spoken word ideas, were being regurgitated in AI-generated outputs online.
You can really feel the frustration in his commentary because, a TEDx talk isn't just something you improvise on a Tuesday.
Definitely not.
It's months of drafting, practicing, and refining an idea until it resonates. His intellectual property, his specific way of synthesizing information, was just fed into a machine.
And then the machine gets all the credit.
Exactly. That machine became smarter, its corporate valuation skyrocketed, and Oberbrunner, who was the literal source code of that specific intelligence, was completely cut out of the transaction.
Man, it makes me think of like a chef. Let's say a chef spends 20 years running a kitchen. They're burning their hands, working weekends, agonizing over spice ratios to perfect this one incredible signature dish. People travel across the country just to eat it.
I love this analogy.
Right. And then a tech conglomerate builds a robot, walks it into the dining room, and the robot instantly scans the molecular chemical makeup of the food. It goes back to a factory, mass produces the exact flavor profile, and parks a competing food truck directly in front of the chef's restaurant, selling the identical meal for 50 cents.
That captures the economic displacement perfectly. I mean, the sheer disparity between the time it takes a human to create versus the time it takes a machine to ingest.
But I want to play devil's advocate here for a second because I know there are people listening who might think, well, welcome to the internet.
Sure, the classic argument.
Yeah, you put something out there in public, people are going to look at it. Humans do this all the time, right? A young art student goes to a museum, studies a Picasso, feels inspired, and goes home to paint something with similar jagged abstract shapes. Is what the AI doing really any different? I mean, is this actual theft or just the unavoidable reality of having a public portfolio today?
This raises an important question, and it actually sits at the absolute center of every copyright lawsuit currently tying up the courts.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The defense these tech companies use is that the AI is simply, quote-unquote, learning, just like a human student does.
Yeah.
But let's look at the actual mechanism of how that learning happens.
Okay, let's break that down.
When a human art student looks at a Picasso, they filter that visual information through their own lived human experience. They have emotions, memories, physical limitations, a unique worldview. When they pick up a brush, the result is fundamentally a new expression born from human synthesis.
Because they possess a soul, they are filtering the inspiration through their own humanity.
Exactly. Artificial intelligence does not have a soul, an eye, or a perspective. It's a mathematical prediction engine.
Right. It's just code.
It does not feel inspired by a painting. It literally dismantles the artist's original work into data points, you know, converting brushstrokes into pixels and pixels into numerical values. It maps the statistical probability of which color usually follows another color in this specific artist's work.
So it's just pure math.
It is an automated algorithmic extraction of value without consent. And understanding that mathematical reliance brings us to a massive hidden vulnerability within these AI companies themselves.
Wait, what kind of vulnerability? Because from the outside, they look pretty invincible right now.
Well, to understand why they are so relentlessly vacuuming up human data, we have to look at how artificial intelligence actually survives. And I use the word survives deliberately.
Okay, go on.
Oberbrunner points out this incredibly fascinating reality in the notes. AI companies require a constant, unending, fresh supply of human-created content just to stay functional.
Why, though? Haven't the big models already downloaded the entire internet by now? I feel like they have enough data to last forever.
They have downloaded the historical internet, yeah.
Yeah.
But human culture is not static.
Oh, right.
Slang changes, new political movements emerge, fashion evolves, completely new aesthetic styles are invented. If an AI stops ingesting fresh human input today, it is effectively frozen in 2026. It becomes a cultural dinosaur.
That makes a lot of sense.
But beyond just staying culturally relevant, there is a much deeper structural mathematical flaw in the AI ecosystem. Our sources highlight a critical phenomenon. When AI systems start to increasingly train on AI-generated material, the overall quality of the machine's output actually begins to self-destruct.
Yeah. If AI is so smart, why does learning from its own kind make it dumber?
It's a well-documented technical issue called model collapse. Think about what an AI actually does. It predicts the most likely average outcome based on its training data. Human art is full of anomalies, weird choices, happy accidents, outliers. That is what makes human art interesting. But when AI generates an image, it flattens those anomalies into a smoothed out statistical average.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the sources describe this like a digital echo chamber. Or let's use the analogy of a photocopier.
Yes. Perfect analogy.
If you take a crisp, handwritten letter with all its unique pen pressure and slight imperfections, and you make a photocopy, it looks decent. But if you take that photocopy and make a copy of it, and then a copy of that copy, and you do it 10,000 times...
It degrades.
Exactly. The image loses all its fidelity, the unique edges blur together, and eventually the whole page degrades into this unrecognizable, muddy, gray smudge.
That is exactly the mechanism of model collapse. Without the anomalies of fresh human input, the AI model converges into a statistical gray sludge. It forgets the outliers. It loses nuance.
Wow.
Unless you introduce a brand new, highly original human document back into the scanner, the machine's output becomes functionally useless.
You know, if you're listening to this and thinking, well, I'm an accountant or a project manager, why do I care about digital illustrators getting scraped? This is why.
Absolutely.
The media you consume, the websites you browse, the design of the apps you use every single day, all rely on this creative ecosystem. If model collapse happens on a massive scale, the internet you log into is going to become a bland, blurry echo chamber of a machine repeating its own boring averages.
The stakes affect everyone who uses the digital landscape. It's not just an art world problem.
So let me synthesize this. If AI desperately needs fresh, weird, unique human art to avoid degrading into mathematical sludge, doesn't that mean the artists, who Oberbrunner literally calls the most valuable sources of data on Earth, actually hold all the leverage in this dynamic?
What's fascinating here is they absolutely do.
Really?
Yes. The entire multi-billion dollar generative AI industry is entirely fundamentally dependent on the continuous free labor of human creatives. But it's a silent leverage.
Because they don't know they have it.
Right. The tech conglomerates are not exactly putting up billboards advertising this vulnerability. They're quietly sweeping up the data as fast as they can, just hoping the human creators don't realize how vital they are to the machine's survival.
But if artists hold all this hidden leverage, the obvious question is, why are they losing so badly?
The disconnect isn't a lack of power. It's a lack of timing. They are losing because of the deeply ingrained habits of the modern internet.
Right. Which brings us to the practical defense mechanisms outlined in the sources. Because Oberbrenner isn't just pointing out the flaw in the system, he's proposing a structural behavioral shift.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the core of the Protect the Art initiative. It promotes a philosophy that sounds incredibly basic, but is actually a radical inversion of how creators operate today. The philosophy is simply protect first, promote second.
Well, it forces a pause.
Yeah.
And that pause is everything.
Because the instinct for a creator is the exact opposite. You finish a painting or you render a 3D animation and the dopamine hits. You are so excited to share it that you immediately upload it to Instagram, TikTok, or your online portfolio. You promote first.
And the millisecond that file hits a public server, the scraping bots log it, ingest it, and strip it of its context. It's gone. The old way of doing things is a trap.
So the initiative introduces a tool called Instant IP, with IP standing for intellectual property. And the mechanics here are crucial to understand because it integrates blockchain technology.
Which I know can sound intimidating.
Oh, for sure. I know the word blockchain makes a lot of people instantly roll their eyes because they associate it with crypto bros and speculative currency. But looking through these documents, they aren't using it for finance. They are using it purely as a defense layer. So how does that actually work against a scraping bot?
We have to demystify the technology here. A blockchain in this context is simply an immutable, permanent digital ledger. It is a mathematical notary public.
A notary public. I like that.
Yeah, it's a public record that cannot be erased, altered, or backdated by anyone, not even the person who created it.
But let me stop you there, though, because initially, I completely misunderstood this. I thought putting a blockchain on an image meant putting some sort of invisible magical force field into the pixels so the AI bot couldn't right-click and save it. That's not what this is, is it?
No. It doesn't build a physical wall around the file. It provides an undeniable legal weapon.
Okay, a legal weapon.
When AI companies scrape data, they operate in the legal gray area of fair use. They claim they found the file floating in the public domain and had every right to analyze it. Traditional copyrights are the ultimate protection, and the initiative is clear that you still need those.
Right, you still need to register it.
But the government copyright office moves at the speed of bureaucracy. It takes weeks or months to process a registration.
And the internet moves in milliseconds.
Precisely. So Instant IP uses the blockchain to provide an immediate, instant first layer of defense. It documents the work the very second it is finished, before the artist uploads it to social media.
Ah, I see.
It establishes cryptographic proof that this specific artist owned this specific digital file at this exact nanosecond in time.
So if an AI company scrapes your portfolio and you send them a cease and desist, they can't play dumb. You have mathematical proof of origin that predates their ingestion of the file.
Yeah.
You basically destroy their fair use defense.
It flips the power dynamic completely. It gives the creator the legal leverage to demand removal or, more importantly, to demand licensing fees and compensation.
I understand the legal power of that. I really do. But I have to push back pretty hard here because I know how exhausted creators are right now.
Oh, burnout is huge.
It's massive. Artists are already burning out trying to keep up with social media algorithms, making reels, engaging with comments just to stay visible. Now we're telling them they have to act as their own intellectual property lawyers and manage blockchain ledgers before they can even post a rough sketch on their feed. Doesn't adding this layer of friction fundamentally kill the joy and spontaneity of creating?
That is a totally valid concern. Friction is always the enemy of new technology. If a tool is tedious, people just won't use it, no matter how much it protects them.
Right.
But the design of platforms like Instant IP is focused entirely on removing that friction. It's designed to be a background habit, literally just a few extra clicks before hitting publish.
I hear that. But, you know, a few extra clicks every single time you make something still sounds exhausting to me.
Well, we have to weigh the friction against the reality of the exploitation. Yeah. Let's look at the psychology of it. Yes, it's an extra step. But if you don't take those few seconds to stamp your work, you are effectively donating your creative DNA to a corporation that is actively building a machine to replace you.
Oof, wow. When you frame it as donating my DNA to my replacement, yeah, a few extra clicks suddenly seems like a very reasonable boundary to set.
And that boundary profoundly impacts the psychology of the creator. Beyond just the technical legalities, our sources spend a lot of time analyzing how this shift changes the careers of the artists themselves.
Let's dive into that psychological impact. Because Oberbrenner argues that for generations, society has fed artists this pervasive, toxic, false choice.
Ah, yes, the narrative of the starving artist.
Yes. The deeply ingrained idea that you must choose between being a pure, suffering creative or being a business-savvy professional. There is this stigma that if you care about protecting your work or if you care about making money from your art, you're somehow a sellout and your art is less authentic. Oberbrenner forcefully argues that this is a complete lie.
And if we look closely at that narrative, we have to ask who it actually serves.
Right.
The romanticized idea of the starving, business-illiterate artist ultimately only benefits the middlemen and the tech companies who want to exploit them.
It's so true.
If society convinces artists that they shouldn't care about the business side of their IP, it makes it infinitely easier to extract value from them without paying for it.
It's gaslighting on an industrial scale. And what's amazing to read in these documents is the ripple effect that happens when artists finally reject that narrative. When they take ownership, when they protect first, they actually gain immense confidence. The source notes highlight that creators aren't paralyzed by the lingering dread of theft anymore.
Security breeds creative freedom. When you know your house has a deadbolt on the door, you sleep better at night, right?
Yeah, exactly.
When an illustrator knows their portfolio is mathematically anchored to a blockchain timestamp, they can share their vision with the world aggressively, without that constant low-level anxiety that they are just feeding the machines.
The adoption rates mentioned in the text are really telling, too. It lists a massive array of professionals who are flocking to this protect-the-art ecosystem. We're talking about traditional oil painters, graphic designers, portrait photographers, sculptors, digital concept artists, basically anyone who produces visual media.
Because the AI doesn't discriminate between mediums, right? So the defense strategy has to be universal.
The universal need for protection is exactly why tools like this are gaining traction so fast. And as a practical side note found in the source material, they mentioned that to help change this behavior, creators can actually receive a complimentary IP protection credit just to try the system out.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you just go to instanttip.todayartist to get started. It's a smart way to remove the initial financial friction and just let people experience the feeling of holding a verified timestamp of their work.
It lowers the barrier to entry, so creators can instantly feel that sense of agency.
So what does this all mean? When we zoom out and look at this entire battlefield between human creators and artificial intelligence, Oberbrenner makes one final impassioned plea in his TEDx material. He says, the world needs more artists, not fewer. He's urging people not to quit.
Yeah.
If we can normalize this defense, if we remove the fear of instant AI theft, do you think we could actually see a modern renaissance of human creativity?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, I think a renaissance is not just possible, it's mathematically necessary if we want our culture to survive model collapse.
Wow, mathematically necessary.
Look back at history. The original renaissance wasn't just a random explosion of talent. It was an era where artists were suddenly valued, funded, and aggressively protected by patrons in a completely new economic model.
Right. The Medici family wasn't just buying paintings. They were providing a secure ecosystem for the creators to operate within.
Precisely. Today, the patrons aren't wealthy royal families. The patron is the artist's own self-agency, secured by immutable technology.
That is profound.
If we give the legal and mathematical power back to the creator, if we ensure they can actually control the licensing of their output, then human creativity will flourish. Because for the first time in the digital age, artists won't be competing on a rigged playing field against a machine that stole their playbook. They will be negotiating from a position of undeniable strength.
To synthesize all of this for you listening, the explosive growth of artificial intelligence over the last few years has turned human creativity into the world's most valuable unpaid training data. It is an extraction that happens in the blink of an eye, threatening to drown out original voices and collapse the digital ecosystem into a blurry sludge of averages.
Yeah, the sludge.
But the creators actually hold the leverage. The machines need them to survive. Through tools like immutable blockchain ledgers and initiatives like Protect the Art, that leverage is finally being weaponized. It's proof that fiercely protecting your intellectual property doesn't stifle your creativity. It's the only way to sustain it in the modern world.
It's an absolutely necessary evolution for the survival of art. But I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over as we wrap up this deep dive.
All right, what is it?
If the new mandatory golden rule for every creator on Earth must be protect first, promote second, and if every single new piece of human expression must be locked behind a cryptographic defense wall before the world is safely allowed to experience it, how will this fundamental shift change the spontaneous, deeply communal nature of art sharing that humanity has relied on for centuries?
Man, that is a heavy question. It fundamentally changes the vibe of standing in front of a painting, knowing that before you were allowed to feel something from it, it had to be mathematically armored against invisible scrapers.
It really is a completely new world.
It is. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep creating, stay curious, and always think critically about the information and the art you consume.